It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're incredible. Yeah. And the thing is so for those of you who are listening who are in network marketing companies, it's a great industry to be in. And you know what? Now I've done it and now I know how to do it right. I actually think it's not perfect. It's right. Not perfect as an industry, but it's probably the best business model I've ever seen. It gives anybody the opportunity to be able to have a business at minimal investment. I mean, they can be as low as, you know, $100 and as high, I think, as sometimes maybe $1,000 or something. But
right.
I mean, each one of our Dickie's barbecue restaurants was $300,000 each.
Of course.
Just to start.
Yeah, of course. Just to start, you don't even have money coming in the door.
Right. And I never made as much money with my three restaurants as I did with my energy business that I had, which I still have, by the way.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, everybody. This is Richard Laidler here. I am a serial entrepreneur. I've been a businessman my whole life. As you can tell by my accent, I'm not from here. I have traditional businesses. I've segued more into residual type businesses now. And I am a top earner, affiliate with a company called Royalty, which has a digital marketing platform.
All right, Richard. So thanks for coming on. I forget, what part of the country are you in? You're in Texas or something?
Yeah, I'm down in Irving, which is part of DFW.
Okay, good. DFW, so I appreciate then you calling in, connecting with me on Zoom so we could record this podcast from the attic of my house. I'm in a makeshift podcast room. It's kind of like my son's closet, I think. It's big enough for an office, but it's funny. So so I hope things are good down there. I hope you're healthy and safe, and with all this crazy coronavirus stuff going on. But I wanted to spend some time going back from, you know, where you grew up, because I know you said you're from England, or at least the UK, and, you know, what your background is in business and so forth, and how it led up to where you are today, and then we'll get all into royalty and what it is and so forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very happy to, of course.
Okay. It's all yours.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, yeah, so as you can tell by my ridiculous accent, although I live in Texas, down here in Dallas, I'm originally from the UK, from England, and within England, I'm from a place called Cambridge, which I'm sure many of you have heard of. I'm kind of, I was born in London, moved to the Cambridge area, or I was moved there when I was like 6 months old, so I've pretty much been raised and schooled and everything all in Cambridge.
Okay.
And, you know, I was a typical, you know, nothing special student. I was very much a musician. That was kind of my thing.
Okay.
And
Cambridge is where Oxford is, right? It's located in Cambridge?
Well, they're kind of close. They are rivals.
Okay.
So they are rivals of one another. I would say there's about an hour drive between the two of them.
Oh, okay. They're not right there. Okay. It's little what I know.
Close enough.
Yeah.
yeah, there is definitely some rivalry there. Apparently you have them between, I know down here we've got Oklahoma and Texas have that similar sports rivalry. Over in Oxford, it's a kind of a general rivalry, but
yeah, very much so.
The boat race is the big one, of course.
Right, of course.
But after high school, you know, got some continued education there, but I was pretty much an entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. My grandfather was an entrepreneur, very much old school, very much handshake type of guys, both successful businessmen in their own right. My dad's business kind of went a little wayward when everything started to move over to China, manufacturing back over into China and Hong Kong over back in the 70s, and he struggled to pivot, which is what we're all having to learn to do nowadays. And so the business wasn't there for me to walk into, which actually was a good thing, because I would have. I'm naturally, you know, I'm gonna default to the easiest path, and I would have just walked in there. But actually, it was worked out better that I didn't actually have to do that, and I started my own thing. And over in the UK, I had a modicum of success, but I failed a lot more times than I succeeded. But I'd have occasional jobs, usually just to make sure I could put food on the table for the kids.
Right.
It was only when I came over here that I kind of had any real success.
Right. But isn't it true, though, that you really fail your way to success? I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was listening to, there's a woman down in your area, Brene Brown. I think she's a Texas native, but she speaks a lot about, she's a PhD psychologist, mm-hmm. but she talks a lot about success in business. And I think that you don't learn anything if you don't fail. It's not like getting out there and being an entrepreneur and taking a chance. You may fail. I mean, you will fail. It's just a question of what you're going to fail at, and you learn more and you develop. And then maybe when you came to the States, you were more ready for that success due to your failures in, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but due to your failures in the UK. And I see that a lot. I've yet to talk to any successful entrepreneurs that didn't fail at several things that they did, you know, because that's how you learn much quicker, I think. So
I agree. And I think that's really good, really wise words currently right now, because people are kind of being forced into a situation where they need to try something new.
Right.
I agree with you that that I probably was a lot more ready coming over here, but there were two things that made me successful here. Well, three, I think we had a good idea. We had a good business.
Right.
Definitely learning the lessons. As much as anything, I didn't have enough money to get home.
Right. So you had to succeed.
So I had to.
That's good.
Nothing like burning the bridges.
Right. Necessity is the mother of invention, right?
You know it. You know it. And I brought my wife over here, and I had a 7-year-old son, and I had a 6-month-old son. And we came over here, and we were, you know, I had to make it work.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's there's maybe some words of wisdom there, because, you know, right now there are a lot of people who are having to pivot, and I'm sure we're going to cover that in a second. And that fear of failing is very much stops people quite regularly. In fact, I was listening to a speaker a little while ago, and he said that people think about failure and success on opposite ends of the scale.
Right, they're
actually
not.
Actually, failure is not the opposite. It's part of the success. It's right over the other side. You kind of have to fail your way there. And the thing is, with failure, you can only fail to a certain point, but you can succeed to any height. And I failed many more times than my successes, but those few successes, the business I came over here to start, we sold for several million dollars. We had major success,
right?
Which way outweighed all of the failures that I had.
Right. I think that's a good point, right? There's a bottom to failure. There's not a top really to success. I mean, that's a good observation. What brought you to Texas? You're like in UK. You're like, well, you know, I'm going to go to the United States, and I'm going to have a weird accent to begin with. So let's go to Texas, where they really talk strange. They'll totally know that I'm a foreigner.
You know, the thing is, I'd never been to America. I didn't know much about the States other than, you know, what I see on the TV.
Right.
But I needed to raise money. I had this new technology that I'd been working with. It was actually back in digital printing, when digital printing was new. Obviously, now it's everywhere. It's commonplace.
Right.
But back then, and I needed to raise $400,000. And the last thing I had was $400,000. Well, actually, it was in pounds at the time.
Okay.
But I drew up a list of people that I knew who had money and who were entrepreneurial. And third on my list was a guy here in Texas, which actually many of you will know of him, not personally, but his products. He was the guy who his company invented and created the Big Mouth Billy Bass. You know that singing fish?
Sure. Yeah.
But that was his company.
That's funny.
And and now he's actually the guy behind the Verydesk.
That's one where you stand, right? And it raises up.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's super successful. He's worth like 9 figures now. He's doing great. Super nice guy as well. Great, nice, really nice.
So
guy.
What? So was the software? It was software. Was it like desktop publishing type of software? Is that what it was?
No, it was actually more practical. It was the practical side of digital printing. So the problem with digital printing back in the day was you could only print on paper.
Right.
And what we had technology that allowed that same image to be printed onto other substrates. So we could do, we could print onto wood or steel or glass. But the actual application that we had was packaging materials.
Got it.
So we could print on cardboard. We could print on shrink wrap. We could make prototype cans or prototype chip bags or something. So Dr. Pepper or, I don't know, Frito-Lay, they'd have a new chip bag for the new football season or whatever. They would prototype the package.
Right.
So before they print millions of them, they have to make one, and we would make that one for them. And our they used to spend like $2,000 or $3,000 on two or three bags because they had to use the old technology. But because we didn't need any films or screens because we were just using digital technology, I could make that bag for vastly less, and we would sell those bags for around 300. So they were, you know, it was 10% of their cost.
I see. So you weren't selling like equipment or anything to these companies. You were the company that did the digital printing for all these prototypes.
We were a service.
Got it.
We basically made packaging mock-ups for the clients: labels, cans, bags, boxes, and
So you needed the investment money to build the system for the equipment and everything for you to print this stuff, right?
Exactly. So the we had to have equipment exactly, and we had to have employees. It was a service, so we were fairly people heavy,
right?
Employee heavy, and so I needed to have that. I wanted to make sure, one of the lessons that I'd learned, that I had enough money to last long enough to create the business, because a lot of people go out of business because they're underfunded.
Right. They burn through too much cash. Sure.
Yeah. And burn it out and then die for not because the business is no good, but they just run out of money.
Right.
And so, and we did great. And the guy who supported us in many ways. He'd learned a lot himself. He came from nothing and has got to the success that he had. And he mentored me many, many times. And it was a really, really great learning experience. And that business did really well.
And back, when was this? Back when you sold the company, about?
So I moved here in 96, back when I was a young 32-year-old, and then sold the business in 2004, so quite a while ago.
Okay, yeah, so right, you're talking more than almost 15 years, 16 years.
Yeah.
Okay, and then where'd you go from there? What'd you do?
Well, I paid a big price. I was a typical – so one of the lessons I hadn't learned was that I've got a family at home.
Right.
And what happened was I was literally 15 hours a day every day at the office.
It's common for entrepreneurs. Right?
There's one time when I had
and
two
all-nighters in a row. You were married at this point and had kids?
I was married. Sorry, because I brought my wife and kids over from the UK. They came over. She did a great job, obviously, looking after the kids. I have two wonderful sons now, but I wasn't at home. Right. And our marriage failed. We didn't make it. She was a keeper as well. That was entirely my fault. And I was just at work. So I had the success of, you know, of a financial success, but I was actually one of the lowest points in my life. I'm generally a happy guy. You know, I'm not the type of person who gets depressed, but you know, if I look at my life, that was actually a lower point, because you know, my wife was awesome and I loved her dearly. I loved the family scenario, but I'd kind of paid the price, and that was a big lesson to learn.
Yeah, that's hard. Mm. That's hard, but it's part of life, right? I mean, you just make obsessed with what you're doing and involved, and it encompasses your life. It's happened to a lot of people.
I was literally like I had an affair with my business. It got all of my love, all of my attention. And so I didn't have any left when I got home.
Right.
And fortunately, she was an awesome mom. I was around enough for my sons, and I'm certainly around a lot for them now. But she raised a couple of really great sons. So I've been very lucky, you know, to have such a great ex-wife. You know, she was a great wife and a great ex-wife still.
Oh, so you still have a good relationship with her?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, she's awesome. She lives out in Arizona now. Got a great new husband, super nice guy. She has a wonderful life over there.
That's good. So you have an amicable relationship, because that's always the hardest part, right? Things, you blow it and things don't work out, and then you have a difficult relationship with your ex, and it's just hard on your kids and hard, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's more than amicable. I mean, I love her to death in the most appropriate way. I mean, she's really lovely, and I know she, you know, she cares, and we chat all the time. We have a little WhatsApp between my two sons and her and I. We are constantly chatting and sending jokes and staying in touch, because we, you know, live far apart.
So. Right. The boys live out with her in Arizona?
No. So my eldest now is now actually almost 32. He's almost the same age as I was when we moved out here. My other, he's in Dallas. He's near me. He and I are very close. And then I have another son who's a musician up in Nashville. And so he just actually experienced that tornado that they had up there.
Literally, it ripped through that place, right?
Yeah. I mean, he sent me a picture of the house behind, and he shouldn't have sent me that picture because, of course, he's my boy, you know?
Right.
And this house was, you know, completely ripped
apart. But he was okay. His house wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it literally, it can't have been much more than 100, 200 feet away, and it kind of broke the windows where he was, and he got some car damage, but the houses behind him. He was obviously right on the edge of it because that house, the houses behind him were kind of like torn apart.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, you figure we're all going through enough. And then if you live in Nashville and you're a healthcare worker or you get sick, whatever, and then this thing rips through your town. Because I hear great things about Nashville. I hear it's a great city. There's a lot of building going, a lot of people moving there. And, you know, you feel for people that have to then go through something else on top of what the whole country's going through, you know?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that, you know, life will always do this to us. You know, you look at history, and we're, you know, what's in front of us right now is what we're focused on. But you look through history, and life always throws these curveballs at you, and you just, you know, you can kind of take it, you can react to it, and in fear or panic or whatever, or you can respond to it in the best way possible.
Right.
I'm very much a glass half full type of a chap.
And right, me too.
I don't mean to be in any way insensitive to folks who suffer during these difficult times, but life is always going to throw them at you, you know, stuff and really bad stuff.
Right. Isn't that what they say? Like the good thing about times when they're bad is that they will get better, but that's like the bad thing about times when they're good. Because you just don't know when somebody's going to hit you over the head with a 2x4. I'm not saying you walk around in fear, but it's the reality of things. When things are really good, they're going to turn for sure.
You know it.
And look, the economy was good. You know, everything was going very well in the country. Obviously, there's a lot of political divide. I'm not a Republican, but I'm you know, I'm a fiscal conservative and a social liberal more. So I'm torn between everything that's going on and everything. And then something like this comes. There's nothing to do with economics, and just pummels us all over the world. We're going to be feeling this for a long time.
Every now and again, nature just shows who's really in charge.
Yeah, you got it. Nature. What was it? I forget who the comedian was who said something like, you know, everybody talks about the world is going somewhere. Well, the world's going nowhere. It's where we're going. That's the problem.
Was that George Carlin?
Maybe. It might have been. He's going to shake us off like a flea, because I think if you look at the history of mankind, right, we've only been here for a tiny fraction of the history of the earth. So it's reasonable to believe that we will someday no longer be here. Something else is going to go on Earth. We don't get the choice. The Earth makes
the decision.
The
human arrogance makes us think that it's our planet. But no, as you quite rightly said, George Carlin said, he'll shake us off like a bad case of fleas.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just awesome.
Yeah. You could be funny but intelligent at the same time.
Oh, yeah. He was really awesome. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, when you look at things that happen in our lifetime, it's, you know, it's followed by really great things. And you know, like right after the Dark Ages, along came the Renaissance.
Yeah.
You know,
good example.
You do have to remember to look at history. You know, a lot of people get really wrapped up in what's going on and think this is the worst thing. This is the worst times ever. Trust me, it's not. Because back in the Dark Ages, you know, there wasn't the law and order like there is today. There wasn't the farming like there is today.
Right. Innovation.
We actually live in good times right now.
Right. And there are people out there that are working hard.
I get that.
Yeah, but there are people out there working hard that are going to change the world and change the way we do things. And we're going to come out stronger for this on the other side, because I don't think anybody really took a look, or maybe there are people at the high levels, but in general, I don't think people really said, okay, well, what are the potential bad ramifications of us all being so tied in globally in terms of things? Although Bill Gates did say it in 2015 when he had that speech about the next problem we're going to have is not a war, it's going to be like a virus. And he was 100% right. But I think that if you look around the world, I think people are going to start rethinking as to how they do business and who they do business with and what global supply chains they're reliant on and how they deal with something like this and protect their people. And, you know, that's going to certainly affect us in the short run, probably detrimentally. But I think in the long run, like you said, it's going to be better off. But there's always going to be people that don't make it and the people that do make it. You know, so I think that a lot of the home-based businesses, we're going to talk about royalty and the things that it's doing. I think that there are opportunities there for people to start doing business. And there are some. Look, I'm a business lawyer. Nobody's calling their business lawyer right now to do business. There's no question about it. But I'm finding ways to stay in touch and to be relevant and to talk to people. I'm doing some wills. I'm, you know, it'll come around. I had to apply for government programs too. I don't know if I'm going to get them. But, you know, so a lot of that stuff you learn, but it's like when GM lays off 15 or 20,000 workers, it's not because those jobs are going away. It's because the skills are changing. So it's going to take a while. You can't retrain people that are 50 and 60 years old that easily, but it'll take time and it'll change and, you know, the world will change. So I think that's very relevant to what you're doing now and kind of the road that you came along. But I know I got us off track. So we were back in Texas, right? Your marriage suffered and got blown up because of your devotion to the business. Mm-hmm. And now where were you at this point now doing? What were you doing?
So I learned about this thing called residual income. I wish I'd learned about it. I wasn't particularly financially literate. You know, I was brought up back in the days when, you know, biology and chemistry and this type of thing was more important than balancing a checkbook or, you know, some of the fundamentals thing you need in life. And I think still schools suffer from a lack of education in that area as well. Anyway,
no question about it.
But I learned about this thing called residual income, and I knew I wanted to do something like that. I had some money. I actually got into a couple of restaurants down here with a friend of mine, which was kind of, I was looking for something that I could, you know, relax a little bit more. Talk about jumping from the pot into the fire.
Right. But you were a passive investor. You said they were barbecue chains, right?
That's right. Dickie's Barbecue Restaurants.
Okay. So you were a passive investor, though. You weren't working there, right?
Well, I was intending to be, but of course, you know, when it's a restaurant and you're not a big enough chain where you can have a general manager, then everybody's rolling their sleeves up and getting to work.
Oh, so this was like a startup chain? It wasn't like you bought a bunch of franchises?
No, they were franchises. Okay. They were already franchises, but you know, as many franchises who are listening to this show will tell you, it's not just, you know, plug and play. You
right,
know,
never.
They're pretty, you know, it's pretty tough. And I'm sure you get involved with it a lot.
I have business owners that buy, and usually they're development rights. So if you buy whatever in Texas, you're obligated to develop a certain number of stores, I would assume, right, over a period of time and so forth.
That's right. And the problem was that we tried to grow too quickly. And what we should have stuck with either one store or two stores, but then we bought a third. And what happened was each was borrowing and begging from the other, and none could get any traction. We should have had one that was strong, but we had the head office was kind of pushing us to move forward. It also appeals to our ego. Great, we're growing and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, when it got to three, it got a little too much. And
it's
were
a different business model, right? Once you have three instead of one. It's a different skill set almost, but I understand the franchisor was pushing you guys to develop, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. But it's also our ego. You know, our ego was there saying, you know, we're getting bigger. And you know, and again, this is all part of the learning curve. You know, I've learned now is, you know, to really consolidate what you've got. This was, you know, this is a while ago. And we were just spread too thin.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I decided to get out of that. And I had at the same time, as I was saying earlier on, understood what residual income was. And I knew that there were ways, you know, you could get rental properties and this type of thing. And I did look at that type of thing. But I actually was shown a business in the energy field that actually was an MLM.
Okay.
And I don't. I've never been attracted to MLMs. I did Amway back in the day. I did Herbalife back in the day when I was like 19, 20. I fell in love with the model. But, you know, I was a typical, you know, person back then when I just went way too over the top. I tried to sell all my friends, you know, soap and vitamins and all of this stuff, and lost all my friendships.
Right. It definitely makes a toll. I have some friends who were in that, and, you know, they're always, you know, they. I think you learn after a while how to sell yourself. But just so people listening, so MLM is multi-level marketing, which sometimes has a bad name in the business. But the more generic word is probably network marketing. But it's the
correct.
A lot of companies have built their base that way. You know.
Yeah, and the thing is that the point was that I failed at Amway and at Herbalife 100% because of my fault.
Right.
They're actually great companies. They're extremely successful. I think Amway is still the number one network marketing MLM company in the world.
Yeah. For all the criticism it gets, it's still the number one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Yeah.
And the thing is so for those of you who are listening who are in network marketing companies, it's a great industry to be in. And you know what? Now I've done it and now I know how to do it right. I actually think it's not perfect. It's not perfect as an industry. But it's probably the best business model I've ever seen. It gives anybody the opportunity to be able to have a business at minimal investment. I mean, they can be as low as, you know, $100 and as high, I think, as sometimes maybe $1,000 or something. But
right.
I mean, each
low,
one,
low
each
entry,
one of our
right.
Right, right. Each one of our Dickie's barbecue restaurants was $300,000 each.
Of course.
Just to start.
Yeah, of course. Just to start, you don't even have money coming in the door.
Right, and I never made as much money with my three restaurants as I did with my energy business that I had, which I still have, by the way. I mean, okay. I have a business. Basically, we help people save money on electricity, whether they're residential or commercial. And the great thing is right now, whilst there are companies that are still struggling, like restaurants and stuff, and people having to close their doors, people are not turning their lights off.
Right.
And so I'm still able to have a residual income coming in. I'm sitting in my home like you are right now. I'm looking at my front door. I haven't been out of it, you know, in a couple of weeks, except for, you know, to go pick up some milk or something. But it makes no difference to my life. I have not been hit in any way negatively with what's currently going on.
Right.
If anything, it's actually my businesses are growing.
Right.
Now you think we're in the business of Plan Bs, you know.
So when it comes to an MLM structure, is it better, in your opinion, and maybe it doesn't matter, to get into companies on the earlier side? So if they're newer companies, or as opposed to, like, look, Amway is a good example. It's probably not only the oldest but the largest MLM structure. So when you're getting in, you're obviously way down on the pyramid, but. Have you found that one's better than the other in terms of timing?
Timing definitely helps,
okay.
But it is not a dictate as to whether you should do it or not.
Okay.
There are many people, there are some people, the biggest earners usually got in earlier, usually, but not always.
Okay.
But there are many people who get in these companies at the very beginning and can't put up with the fact that they are actually the pioneers. You're the ones going through the growing pains and the challenges and the things that don't go right. Like in my energy business, you know, our number one income earner is making like several hundred thousand dollars a month. And people go, oh, well, it's lucky for you. You were in right at the very beginning. And he quite rightly says, if you'd been in at the beginning when I was, you would have quit.
Yeah, because it was hard.
Because, you know, sometimes people's lights were going out, or they weren't getting their bill on time, or they were having the usual growing pains. And the thing is, if you're going to get in at the beginning, yes, you have the advantage of potentially being one of the bigger earners.
Right.
But you are also going to have to go through the pioneership and the growing pains and the learning and this type of thing. And many will, you know, many won't do that. But yeah, there's advantages. But I also know there are many people who got in the electricity business that I'm in later years and have become six-figure earners. They've done six-figure earners a year.
Right.
I mean, our number one is six-figure earner a month. But, you know, you can have a very, very good, solid business, whether it's electricity, whether it's makeup, whether it's skincare products, whether it's nutrition products. Most network marketing companies, because there are governing bodies to make sure that they're behaving properly, most are really good opportunities. Whether you're going to succeed or not is entirely down to you.
Right. Right. I guess you really have to like the company, like the product, believe in it, believe in its structure, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but obviously royalty, which we're going to talk a little bit about, that wasn't your first that's your most recent foray into network marketing. Okay. So keep going. So you start in the energy business, right?
All right. So I'm in the energy business. I'm doing well. I've got a nice residual income coming in, you know, four figures a month coming in on a regular basis.
Okay.
So not huge money, but enough money to pay all my bills, whether I worked or not. I like that. But then I was introduced, and I was unrecruitable too. I love that company. I still love that company. And I'm unrecruitable. I do believe in focus. I don't think it's very hard to do more than one of those types of businesses.
Right.
But I was introduced to a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, you know, I've got this new thing that's going to, you know, may help you with your Ambit business, may help you get more leads or more customers or whatever. And I said, well, and he said, you know, there is an affiliate side to it. And I said, well, I'm unrecruitable. He says, yeah, I get that. He said, but I think this will actually help you on the customer side. You know, not the MLM side,
right,
or the network marketing side,
right,
but on the how to gather more customers. So I took a look, and this was royalty back in the day. It was different technology than it was today. It was some Bluetooth technology that was really, I don't know if we have time to go into it right now, but I'd be happy to if you wanted to. But it was just simple technology, and I was kind of enthralled by it. It wasn't in any way competitive to what I was doing. And it was an opportunity. It's exactly what he said. It was a way for me to be able to find more customers. And so I got involved with royalty as a customer first, as because it was a way of me being able to use digital marketing to gather customers. Because I'm like most, like 99% of small businesses or network marketers, I have no idea how to use digital marketing. I've got access to it.
right.
on my phone or on my computer. We can all get to social media, but I got no idea how to use it effectively. And this was a nice door entryway into that.
So how did it, we got plenty of time, but how did it work at that point?
Okay, so back then it was some Bluetooth technology. It was just a little Bluetooth device.
Okay.
It was like a beacon. They were called beacons.
Okay.
And what I could do was on my phone, I could type a 40-character message. Okay. There was no graphics or anything, just a 40-character message.
Like a text message. It was a text message.
Kind of
right?
like a yeah, like a text message, but I was limited to the number of characters that I could have.
Okay.
And then I could send that message from my phone to this little Bluetooth device. They were called GEMS.
Okay.
That was a kind of like a trade name for it, but they're actually called beacons.
Okay.
And then what I could do was I could turn that beacon on and put it somewhere, and all of the only Android phones within 100 meters or 110 yards for those of us who are American over here now, could receive that message on their phone.
So
and it would come up in their in notifications. When you swipe down, it would come up in notifications.
So this device was a small, I guess it wasn't tiny, but it was a small device that you would put like in a coffee shop, let's say, for example?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You could carry it around with you. But what I did, and then
oh, it's not something you had to like go to the coffee owner and say, can we put this in your store? You would just have it with you, put it on the table, do whatever you're doing, and it would blast it out to all the people nearby.
You know it.
Okay.
And so, as far as size is concerned, it's like about a little tiny bit bigger than a quarter diameter.
Oh, okay.
And about four of them piled up high. So,
okay. So it's a tiny device.
Tiny device.
Okay.
And so it was, I'm a little ashamed of this, but because what I would do is I had a few of these devices because I was looking for electricity customers.
Right.
So I would go to apartment complexes and I would find places to hide these things. I'd find a flower pot or, you know, in a restroom or in a, you know, somewhere I could hide it.
Yeah.
I was literally like a stalker. I was like a creeping around these things because I'd also have to go, because very often apartment complexes are bigger than 100 meters. So I'd have to move it around.
Right. Because and you had to be near it in order to send out.
Yeah.
You had to be connected to it.
Well, no, I didn't have to be. Once I had sent the message to the beacon, I could leave it there. I could drive home and leave it there.
And it would send out the message on a regular basis?
Yes.
Oh.
See, and it was really cool. It was a really cool little funky idea that I could get onto people's phones because, you know, with what's going on right now and more so than ever before, that's where the people's eyes are now.
Right. They're now, even more so. Now, it must have been taking advantage of some feature of the Android phone because you said it only worked with Android phones, right?
Exactly right. So there was an app.
You were explaining about the device and why it worked with Androids and not with Apple, and then it got cut off.
Right. So there's an app called Nearby that is resident on all Android phones, not on Apple, which is why Apple's couldn't receive the message.
Okay.
And this little app Nearby was there so that you could pick up weather reports or Bluetooth messages from, you know, local areas. And what was happening was these little beacons were actually kind of hijacking that app. And I'm not saying it was in any way sinister.
Right.
But they were using that as a means of getting a message to people's phones. And there were three or four companies that got going to actually take advantage of this. And they were pretty effective. They were growing pretty well. And I did get occasional leads from it. It did do okay, but I was relying on people's Bluetooth to be turned on,
right.
Nearby to be turned on, and that they weren't. It wasn't in an area where there was metal in between, or the planets needed to be a little bit aligned. But here was the thing: I knew, like you were saying earlier on, I knew that, and when you're at the beginning of something, then there's a chance you could be one of the successful guys. And
right.
So I wasn't so much investing in this technology as I was investing in our CEO. The CEO is a guy called Justin Bellababa. He's an extremely intelligent man. And I was invested in him. I thought these beacons were like $47 a month.
Okay.
So it wasn't costing me much. And I thought, well, I'm just going to stick with this and see where this goes. And, you know, a couple of years later, you know, I'm really glad I made that investment because I am one of the guys who was in at the beginning. But the thing was that technology went away because literally 18 months ago, Google saw what was going on.
You don't mean 18 months ago from now. You mean 18 months later. Then.
No, 18 months. So 18 months back. So the beacons went away about 18 months ago. It was November 2018.
Oh, so they've been using them. Okay, I figured this went away a long time ago. Okay, fine. So 2018, right, so, what changed?
So what happened was Google saw what was going on, and they literally overnight, boom, took away Nearby. Overnight, everybody who was in this business, there were, as I say, four or five companies that I knew about. There were probably a few just getting started because they knew this technology was probably going to go somewhere.
Right.
Everyone was out of business overnight.
Wow.
And talk about pivoting. This, again, this is kind of going to be a central theme to everything we're talking about today, is that you never know what's going to happen, what's going to come and, you know, kick you in the proverbial rear end to make you change. Fortunately, Justin Bellababa, the CEO, had already started working on a little bit of technology because he knew he shouldn't be reliant upon, you know, a giant like Google. I mean, his whole technology was reliant upon that. That's irresponsible.
Right.
And he started to look into some new technology, which was actually the beginning, the early days, of what the technology is right now. And when everybody else went out of business, he pivoted, and within a month, he was back in business. With a replacement product for those gems, with a product that was 100 times better, that then grew into what the royalty platform is now. And so hats off to him. I mean, he deserves a lot of credit for that. And I'm glad I made the investment of my faith in him, because now we're probably a year down the line from when that happened.
Right.
Yeah, it was in January was in December that it happened, and he had replaced it by January. And I'm now, what is it, a year and 2 months into it, and this technology is just absolutely taken off. It's just blown up.
Right. Well, but now it's not a device you have to place somewhere. Now it's all in the cloud, so everybody's connected, and it's much easier.
Exactly. So So the first thing that came along to replace this was, because this was the mindset we were in. Right? We were in the mindset of being able to deliver a message in a certain location.
Right.
And so that was the replacement we were looking to do. And there was, they created something called an ad pin, ADPIN, ad pin.
Okay.
And basically what it allowed you to do is, it was, instead of you relying on a device, what you could do is you could go into a little ad editor, and we had a little app.
Okay.
And you had a little ad editor in there. Now you could create a full color ad. No longer was it 40 character message. You create a full ad with photographs and everything, and instead of dropping a gem somewhere, this beacon dropping it somewhere, you could literally pinpoint on a map anywhere in the world. So I had six apartments that I was trying to promote myself for electricity to. Instead of having to drive out to them all the time, I could literally just drop one of these ad pins right over the top of the apartment complex. And then the people in that apartment complex, both Android and iPhones,
right,
could now receive the ad on any one of over a million different apps that are out there, like Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google, USA Today, CNN, whatever they happen to be looking
for. So they have to be a user, but there's so many apps that there's a good chance that somebody's on something is going to see it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's just regular, it's normal online marketing, online ads. All this was a new portal of being of a regular guy like me who knows nothing about digital marketing to be able to do it. There are other people who could do something similar, but they were the one percenters. They were working for the big company, or they were in digital marketing for 10 years. This was something, this little portal that the regular guys, the 99% of us who don't know anything about this, could just could do it. And it was really, really successful when we got started.
Okay, so basically you could drop an ad on people almost anywhere, right? Anywhere you were able to do business. You weren't restricted by geographic locations, places you had to drive to anymore, right?
Right, exactly. So for me, that was with electricity, I was dropping an ad pin over an apartment complex. And you could change the size of the circle that the ad pin kind of the radius that it hit.
Okay.
And it could go anywhere from, at the time, I think it was like half a mile was the smallest. And if I remember rightly, I think it was like about 6 miles was the widest. It's now 500 miles, but then it was from half a mile to 6 miles. So an example would be a more radical example would be someone who's like maybe a realtor, right? Who's in Dallas.
Right.
There are hundreds of companies in California who are moving to Dallas. Well, I would love, like, for example, there's one called McKesson Corp. They're a big pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
Right. They got thousands of employees who are moving from California to Dallas. Boy, would I like to be that realtor.
Yeah, sure. You know? You want to get in front of them before they get here.
Exactly.
Make a connection with them.
Right. So a realtor could create an ad, and the ad say, McKesson Corp employees, are you moving to Dallas?
Right.
You know, then have a photograph of himself, DFW realtor and relocation expert.
Yeah.
And then he could open the map and then drop the pin right over the top of McKesson campus in San Francisco before they even get here.
Right, because you have an identifiable group because you know they're not being hired. They're being relocated.
Right.
And they just find them and drop them there.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's real estate people. Well, mortgage people need to do the same thing. They're going to need a mortgage.
Right.
They're going to need a moving company. They're going to need a landscaping company. They're going to need a dentist when they get here. Who'd have thought that a Dallas dentist would be advertising in San Francisco? Or catch them before they get here.
Right.
So this has turned into something – you know, really crazy. And also that ad pin is now just one very small part of a comprehensive digital marketing platform. Now it's grown into this whole solution.
Right. Now, you said that you build a whole sales funnel out of, it's not just the ad anymore. It's capturing them, taking them through your process, staying in touch with them, remarketing to them.
There you go.
The whole thing.
Exactly right.
So let's go back a little bit. Did it help your energy business, grow your energy business?
Oh, massively.
Like crazy.
Massively. Absolutely. Yeah. The challenge was, though, that I was still in the mindset of, because again, I don't have a marketing degree, right? And most people don't. 99% of small business owners are out there looking for who's looking to buy today.
Right.
We're looking for that sale today. And there are a number of people who are switching their electricity today, like your audience right now. How many of them are actually looking to switch their electricity right now at this very second?
It's very few
small,
of course. Right, because they're all worried about everything else. And
well,
they're not paying their bill either.
well, of course, there's that. But the point is that even though they're not switching their electricity today, there will be a time when they are.
Yeah, and you want to be in their ear. Right.
Right, exactly. So my job is to make sure I'm in front of them when they're ready to buy, not when I'm desperate to sell to them. So this ad pin, right, this is all we had when we first started. And so I was trying to use it as a sales tool.
Right.
Like they see my ad and then they call me to get electricity. And there's no question that worked. But again, it's a one and done type thing.
Right.
And that was a wrong mindset. And I've learned over the last year that really what I should have been doing, although it wouldn't have helped me back then because we only had the ad pins. But now what I do is I still advertise over the apartment complex, but I'm not looking to necessarily win them as a customer today. I'm looking to get their contact information.
Right. You're looking for a long-term approach.
Exactly. Because if I've got an apartment complex of 500 people and maybe I've got, you know, 120 email addresses that I've got from them because of my promoting and my advertising and giving stuff away for free. I can talk to them every day so that when they're ready to buy, when they're in the market, I'm in front of them and I've got an opportunity to win it. That's marketing.
Right, because there's people – look, everybody – not everybody's a customer, but, you know, most people can become a customer of yours, but you just want them to think of you instead of somebody else they just met at a networking event because – you know, they've received stuff from you on a regular basis. They know you're out there. You're real. Look, the whole idea of sales, let's call them sales funnels, but even before the internet, there were processes where you would get a mailing list and you would send it out and then people would respond. And when they responded, then you'd send them something else. And you'd stay in touch with them over time, working in through your system. And at the bottom, it would drip out. But now with these automated systems where you can keep in touch with people and continue to market them and continue to be relevant to them, the person that doesn't make it through the bottom of the funnel at that point may still make it out of the funnel at another point.
That's exactly the point.
You don't waste these names.
But you've nailed it. That's exactly what it is. Like, for example, I'm talking, I've got an Apple phone in front of me and an Apple computer.
Right.
There was no decision. Apple didn't have to sell me. They had done such a great job with marketing that the sale was superfluous.
Right. It was just timing.
Now, they are they're the ideal at it.
Right. It's just timing, though. It's just timing. That's all. It's not.
It was just timing. Yeah. Right. I wasn't – like, for example, if they were just advertising to me today to see if they could sell me a laptop today, they're not going to get my business because I've already got one.
Right.
And I'm not in the market right now. But because they're always in front of me because of marketing, when I am in the market, then I'll go and I'll be ready to buy from them.
Yeah.
And this is the mindset that, you know, for your listeners, you know, 99% of small businesses don't use digital marketing. Just is what they want to. And the 1% is the big companies are kind of monopolizing that real estate where the eyes are. And we're kind of standing by and watching it.
Right.
I really would encourage, whether it's with royalty or whether it's just in general, to really understand that there has been a change in the way people buy now.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
You know, even if they're going to go and buy that camera in the store, they've done 75% of their research online before they're going to the store.
Well, I mean, that's why the big companies use all these social media influencers.
Right.
It's not because they think they're going to necessarily sell to the people that they know right away. It's that they want to, you know, be a brand that's promoted by this person and thought of. And, you know, when you said before that people don't really do digital marketing, I don't know that's completely true. I think what they do is what they think is digital marketing. Like they'll mm-hmm. post something on Facebook, although they'll make a comment on LinkedIn on a regular basis. But what they're doing is, first of all, they're probably not relevant because it drops down in a feed if they don't have followers or whatever. They right. don't have a system in place to work people through. Like, you're not doing all this by hand every day. You put the pieces in place and it does the work for you when you identify the pieces. But I think that there's a lot of small business owners, which is why I wanted to talk to you about this. And like you said, there are other companies that are doing similar things. There's not a lot of them, and not a lot of them are good at it. But I think that people need to learn about systems like royalty, which you kind of actually learn about by accident because somebody said, mm-hmm. hey, let me help you with your business. And then you had an epiphany later on. But mm-hmm. I think that, and Bill obviously is very excited about it, who introduced the two of us. I think that people need to rethink, and it's maybe because of lack of knowledge, right? They don't know these tools are out there
right.
that can allow them to do marketing like a larger company without the large infrastructure.
And I think you're right. I think it's definitely a mindset thing, and I don't think it's people's fault. We've not.
No, they don't know.
A few people, right? They're, some people have got a marketing degree, but most don't.
Right.
So why would we know? You know, and as you quite rightly say, people are doing little. You know, they'll post on Facebook. They'll do little things, but this has to be a full process. You know, if they see, like, for example, people say, oh, I'm doing digital marketing because I got a website.
Right.
Well, that is digital marketing, but it's not digital marketing. That's just really an online brochure that's going to tell people about what
right.
you do.
It's a billboard on the highway of life that they may never drive by.
Right. Exactly. I mean, my first question is, are you capturing
yeah.
people's information
no,
when they come to your
not.
Website?
They're not. I ask people all the
they're
time.
Not.
Richard, I work with people all the time as the lawyer, but you know, are you capturing names? Are you building a keep in touch list?
Mm-hmm.
There was a very good book years ago. I don't know if it's still out. It was called The Referral of a Lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever want to read it, it probably fits in very well with what you do with royalty and what royalty does as a program. But it was before they've updated it to go with, you know, electronic communications. But originally it was a parable, you know, like these books that are written by like Gung Ho and all these parable stories about businesses and how to stay in business. It was written like a story about a woman. I think it was a woman who comes into a coffee shop and she's talking to the owner and she's very frustrated. She's in sales and she can't make any money and people don't know who she is. And this person who owns the coffee shop say, listen, why don't you come Tuesday and we'll talk about what you need to do. So she shows up and he's not there. And somebody comes up. It's like the Christmas story, you know, when they meet the ghosts. And mm-hmm. somebody comes up who's an expert at whatever it is, and this person ends up meeting with five or six different people that this person knows, the coffee owner posts, that takes them through the process of, you know, how do you build a list of people? How do you keep in touch with them? How do you stay relevant to them? How do you appreciate them? How do you make them think of you? Because most of the time, they don't think of you. And if you have a list of 250 to 500 people, and that's what they say, if you really try hard, you probably know at least 250 people that know your name and so forth. But that multiplies. So as you reach out to the 250 and then they reach out to those other 250, I think that first level is like 62,000 people. And it was a
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. And it's a story about, and I think it would, you should read the book. It's like 100 pages. And it's a story about how to build a system. If I sit down with a business owner, I say, well, wouldn't it be great if you were in contact with people on a regular basis and they were always thinking of you and you're offering them, you know, deals and this and think of me and how can I help you? And that you wouldn't know what to do with your business. And they're like, yeah, well, how do I do that? Like they don't even know, and they'll leave and then they don't even know where to get started.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because first of all, there's a couple of things on that is if you have a list of people, they can take away your job. They can take away your business. They can even lock you away in your home. If you've got a list of people,
right,
you can be back in business tomorrow.
Networks, right? Networks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's, I mean, there's a friend of mine who has been, who's been a digital marketer for now 11 years.
Right.
And he's one of the one percenters, right? He's not like us. He's been doing this a while. And he has built over 11 years, a list of 23,000 people.
There you go.
And but here's the thing, he sells a course on LinkedIn and the course I think is $97 and I think there's an upsell to $297.
Like how to do how to use LinkedIn?
How to use LinkedIn.
Right, right? Okay.
Yeah, just I've seen a bunch courses of on how to be effective
with LinkedIn. Everybody wants to learn.
Right. And but the but here's the thing that was interesting was his wife had told him that we've got our air conditioning's gone out. We need a new air conditioning unit. And he showed me his back office and how this would work and stuff. And he said, oh, don't worry. It's just going to cost me an email. And I kind of didn't really understand what he was talking about. But he said, well, look, here's the thing. So I've got to find $5,100 for this new air conditioning unit. It's going to cost me an email. Here's what I'm talking about. He showed me an email that he sent out to his full 23,000 list.
Right.
And he said, and look at my sales. They're pretty abysmal. And he said, I've only sold to 0.0016 people. Okay. And you think, wow, that's really bad numbers. But the point was his list was so big that it represented 39 sales, some of them of 97 and some of them at 297. He actually made $5,700 profit on that one email.
To pay for the air conditioner.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Because he had a list. And right. So if people go, well, how do I build a list? Well, the first thing to do is open up that drawer of all those business cards that you've had in there for years and years and
right.
years.
Right.
You know? And this is, in fact, this is when we, you know, with the royalty platform, we have a database in there, which is also a CRM. The first thing I have people do is get all of those business cards, all the notebooks of everybody's name, address, and everything that you had and upload it to that database. And the first thing you do is send an email out saying, I'm so sorry, I haven't been in touch. I've just come across your card. I'd love to get back in touch with you. Come join my Facebook page.
Every good sales organization does it. They sit down with their new salespeople. Especially right. the insurance companies, because life insurance, mm-hmm. for example, is very hard to sell, right? Nobody wants to buy it. They only want it when they're
exactly.
sick. Even if they want it, they have a health issue, you can't sell it to them. So they take these young guys, they sit down, they say, listen, you got to do your, what do they call it? Your 200 list or your 250 list. When I came out of right. law school, I started working for insurance companies. I had to do this. And it's hard to come up with, when you're young, 250 names, but you come up with the names mm-hmm. and that's where you start. And any of these videos you watch on how to build your marketing list, and that's where they all start. Well, you got to start with mm-hmm. who you know, not just go out and get some random names, because they'll build mm-hmm. on build. And then you can start getting in touch with people, like you said. Hey, and you know what? Now that you mention it, that's exactly what they say in the referral of a lifetime. Make your 250
oh, really?
List. Yeah. Send out an apology letter, not a terrible letter, but an apology letter saying exactly what you said. I have to apologize that I haven't been in touch in a long time, but I wanted to catch you up on the things that I'm doing and this and that. Can we stay in touch? Permission marketing. Yeah. I'm telling you, read the book. You'll be like, oh my God, this is exactly what I'm doing. Just and in those days, you had to do a list and postcards and follow up. Now with email marketing, it's much easier. You can build a list.
And in fact, even a stage further than that, you're exactly right. First of all, you're exactly right. If you've got a whole bunch of business cards sitting in your drawer, that is a gold mine sitting there
yeah.
waiting for you to just
right.
go
you're
and
an
take
idiot.
Advantage of it. But here's another thing as well that is really useful. It's a lot of people who are listening maybe right now say, well, I've got all those business cards, but I've got to call them all. I've got to reach out. But no, you don't have
no,
to.
You
now
don't
with
have
digital
to.
Marketing.
Right.
You
right? Get, the they get to opt out if they want, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the thing is, they're probably not going to opt out of a friendly email
right.
saying, hey, I'd love to stay in touch. Come join my Facebook page. Not
right.
Because you're not saying, hey, I'm in this product now. Buy my such and such.
Right.
You're not trying to
you
sell
never,
them.
Right. You don't ever say that. Look, when I meet people at events or online or whatever, I add them to my email list. I send them an email, say, thanks for meeting you, Richard. I appreciate it. If you don't mind, I've added you to my email list. There's an unsubscribe link on any of our emails. And I have an automated system that sends you, I don't know, 4 or 5 emails about over the next 6 weeks about my firm. And Perfect. Then you start to learn about things. But people don't even spend the time to learn to find out these systems exist.
No, absolutely. And the great thing in Royalty, it has exactly what you just said built into it.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
When you meet someone, they you can just say, instead of swapping a business card, you can just write their information in there. It'll automatically go straight to your database.
Yeah.
And it will automatically send out the emails. Because you don't have to go back and remember to do it.
Right.
It does it automatically.
You can do it right through an app on your phone. You can do it on your phone. You don't even need a laptop.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's what's happened with all this automation. I think it's an exciting time. And I think that if people learn, and I'm gonna connect you with some people that are, I have a guy who's Jack, 78 years old. If you listen to my podcast, the first two episodes I did, it was a 2-part episode mm-hmm. with Jack and his whole story. But he's got a company now called Network All the Time. And he trains people on networking, keeping in touch. But then I don't know what they do after that. So I think this type of a system and these types of programs is something where he can say to something, okay, now that you've built your network, what do you do when you get the person's name? That's the problem. That's really the problem. There was a restaurant nearby, or it was a sandwich shop or whatever. It opened near my office a while ago, and I was in there with my dad or a friend or whatever, and they had a little fishbowl. You're okay on time, right? I'm telling you stories. And
all right.
Okay, and there was a little fishbowl where you put your business card in, right? You could win a free sandwich or something for lunch. So I said to whoever I was with, I'm pretty sure it was my father, I said, we're never going to hear from them. They're going to be out of business in 6 months. He says, well, why do you say that? I said, because they're capturing everybody's name in the community and they're not doing anything with the name. Sure enough, never heard from them, even after I probably put my card in 6 times and they went out of business.
Yeah.
They had it. It was all right in front of them. It was gold.
Yeah, no question. But you have to be proactive. And
right. The
thing is, sometimes it can be overwhelming because there are so many things you could do. So you start with one thing. You start with something simple, and that's why the first thing I do is when I get my business cards. I had a friend of mine's 14-year-old daughter just load them all up so I can give her some Christmas money. She typed them into my database.
Right.
I sent them one email. That's something I could do. That said, hey, I'm, sorry I haven't been in touch, but, go join my Facebook page.
Right.
Now they're on my Facebook page.
Right.
Now I can use something called content marketing. And this is actually now where most of my business comes from, my electricity business. Even though I have those, the ad pins, the online advertising I was talking about.
Yeah.
Most of my business now comes because I'm directing everybody to my Facebook page. And on my Facebook page, every 10th or 12th or 15th post, I can, through the Royalty platform that we were talking about, I can now post content marketing. Royalty will generate automatically for you content that's relevant to your industry. In my case, it's electricity, energy, weather, or anything to do with something that's there. So I can be constantly posting on my Facebook page. So my friends and family, the people who actually probably want to give me their business, as long as it's on their terms and not me trying to sell to them, are constantly reminded in a very appropriate way about Richard's in the electricity business.
Right.
I'm not saying buy my electricity, buy my electricity. I'm just putting an article out there about, I don't know, about how November 2019 was the hottest November since 1948,
Right.
And they can read the article.
But you didn't have to write the content.
No, it's
all set up ahead of time.
Right. So when you sign up for the Royalty platform, you answer a few questions about your industry.
Right.
And the Royalty platform generates all this stuff for you.
I see. Okay. And then, so the only thing you're really doing is inserting them onto the conveyor belt. You're putting the email into the system, and the rest of it's, I mean, I guess you can build it and change it and add things to it over time, but it affects everybody in the system.
But the thing is, it's a learning curve, right? When remember 99% of people, I was probably exaggerated by saying that I'm not doing any digital marketing.
Right.
But they're not doing any effective digital marketing.
Right. That's the issue.
Know how to
None
do
of
it.
It's effective, right? They feel good, but it's not working. What am I doing wrong? It doesn't work for me. No, you're not doing it right.
It has to be a shallow gradient. So for example, when you first get signed up with a Royalty platform, there's something called three-click marketing. So you wake up in the morning, you make yourself a cup of coffee, and an email comes through to you because of the questions you answered when you joined and says, here's today's social content or content media for you. And it shows you an article that's – and it gives you a rating of how relevant it is to your industry, like kind of like Netflix, you know, how relevant it is to your likes and dislikes. And you could read the article and go, wow, yeah, that's really cool. You know, November 2019, wow, that's a great article. And it says, would you like to post this on your Facebook page? All you have to do is push the button yes, and it will post it for you. It will then say – it'll say, first of all, is it has it appeared? And you say yes. It'll then say, would you like to add this as a blog to your website? You go yes. So you've got that's two clicks so far.
Okay.
This is tough. Even on the most technophobes of us.
Right.
And then it says after that, it says, would you now like to email this to your list? Yes. So it's called three click marketing. So in the morning, even though you may not know anything about digital marketing, all you need to do is three clicks and you are having a presence out there to the people who you know, love and trust, and you're constantly building your Facebook page because you're, you know, you've got your online ads out there. It's a whole process. So when you first get started, it's like painting by numbers.
Right.
But eventually, as you get more practiced, you can edit it a little bit more by yourself. And now you can be painting a picture yourself. But it's a nice shallow gradient bringing the 99% of us who don't know how to get online in a nice, gentle way and effective way. And right now, our business is just taking off.
Right. I'm sure. People, because that's all they can do is content marketing right now.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
The only contact with the world you've got is this window that you're, you know, when you're looking in the camera on a Zoom call or, you know, or on Facebook.
On the
this
phone,
is the only connection to the world.
Now, what platforms does it interact with? It obviously Facebook's one of them. Does it work with LinkedIn and Instagram and what are the other ones? Twitter and you just connect it to your account, basically.
So the online ads
will
advertise on over a million different apps. There's like all of them. Anyone you can mention, it's going to be yes.
Okay.
The social content's going to be more with your like your Facebook and your LinkedIn and your Twitter and this type of thing. But you can take that same social content and post it on Instagram and stuff as well. But the platform, just to kind of – because we've kind of generalized, the platform has a few things that you need. It has it can help you attract people. It has online advertising, which we talked about, those ad pins.
Yeah.
It has the content marketing, who's going to talk to the people who you already know, right? So online ads are people who you don't know. Content marketing people who you do know. It also does your SEO for you. It gets you positioned where people will find you. So that's how to attract people. That's all in the platform. Okay. And then once you've got them, now you need to communicate with them. So there is a database in there, first of all, because you're constantly collecting people's information.
Right.
That's
so it's
the one
CRM
thing that we are doing
as well. CRM.
Right, with the CRM.
Right.
Right. So a CRM, for those who don't know, is a customer relationship management system.
Right.
It's kind of like the database. It's now proactive. It's going to remind you when to call, keeps track of your calls and this type of thing. But then it also has, so you've got your website, so you've got your CRM. It's also got email campaigns. It's also got your full analytics. It's got blogging. It's got newsletters. And the whole thing is driven by artificial intelligence. Remember I was telling you it goes out and looks at the information you put in about your company?
Right.
It literally puts it up for you in the morning. You sit there with your coffee. This is my morning. I get up. I make my coffee. I look for the email that says, here's your social marketing for the day. Would you like to post it? Click yes. Would you like to make it a blog? Click yes. Would you like to make it your email? Click yes. I'm a one-man band. I'm busy. I haven't got time to do all this marketing, but I can do three clicks in the morning.
Got it.
And it's all in the platform. And the thing is, as well, it starts at like $87. So, you know, of the 99, and I don't want this to sound like a pitch. The reason why I'm saying this is because there are so many businesses right now who are struggling, who are suffering because they can't communicate with their customers. This is a simple to use, low cost way for people to be able to stay in business. If you as a restaurant are pivoting, you've got to, and now your wait staff are now delivery drivers.
Yeah.
You've got to let people know. And this is the way to let people know.
Right.
So
if
I was
you
on
had
my
a list,
a little bit then.
No, but if you had a list built up already, you could communicate with those people very easily.
Absolutely. Like, for example, I ordered Outback the other day. Now, I know they're a national chain. They're not a like a small company. But the one thing I couldn't understand why, when they delivered from me, they didn't give me an opportunity to give them my email address. What they should have done when I placed my order was say, we've got a 20% off if you order next week. We just need to know where to send it or fill out this form. So now they can communicate with me. If you're listening here, guys, please take every opportunity to give something away, like a 20% off voucher a meal in return for your information.
Yeah, look at what's the big sites, Wayfair and those. Every time you go there, they're like, well, give us your email. We'll give you 15% off your next order. They want your email. They're not stupid.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, Richard.
I also want that 20% off.
Well, of course.
So it's a fair exchange.
You're fine. You're happy to give up your email for that.
Of course.
Right. So,
I'm
Richard.
I'm not going to give a fake email if it's something that I value.
No, of course not. And even if you do, how many people really do that? They don't. Most people give real emails.
Well, some do, but you know.
And by the way, if you give a fake email, you don't get the 20% coupon because it goes somewhere else.
Exactly. So the trick is making sure you're giving value to people.
Right. Sure.
Make sure you give value and then they'll give you something back in return.
Right. So if somebody wants to learn more, and we'll obviously put this in the show notes, we'll put a link to Royalty, maybe your contact information. If somebody wants to learn more about content marketing, digital marketing, everything they can do through the Royalty platform, where would they go? They go to the website? Do they contact you? The best way to do it.
They can go to the website. I would rather they contact me so that I can make sure that they get taken care of.
Okay.
So I have a website, actually one of my websites, which is richardlaidler.now.site. So it's RICHARD Laidler, LAIDLER.now.site. And on there I have a contact back form. And if you want to learn
site,
some more,
SITE or SITES.
I'm sorry, SITE. So richardlaidler.now.site.
Okay, and we'll also put that in the show notes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And there, and there'll be a contact back form on there. And then I receive that information. And I can get you, there's like a video presentation of how this thing works. It's not a sales pitch. It's purely descriptive. This is how it works.
Right.
And you'll know if it makes sense for your company or not.
Right. And it's a monthly subscription, right? You're paying $80-some-odd a month for all this services.
Correct. But there is also, we have like an opportunity where you can actually get it for free if you refer it to three other folks. And it's not very hard to refer. This is a product right now that's helping people, helping businesses stay in business. So it's a very easy product to refer. If you refer three people, then your platform is now for free. So you can get all your digital marketing done for free.
Got it.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's awesome.
All right. Good. Well, let's definitely stay in touch. I'd love to talk to Justin at some point about his, the genesis of this whole thing.
I can make that happen.
Yeah, that would be great. And listen,
if you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.